Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Before we start today's podcast, a quick heads up on Sheerluxe's VIP Club. From restaurants, bars and hotels to beauty, wellness and shopping, Sheerluxe partners with some of London's best destinations and hottest brands to bring its VIPs exclusive monthly offers. So why not sign up? It'll cost you just £5 a month or £50 for the year. Use your card once or twice and you'll have made that amount back in no time. For more information, visit sheerluxevip.com.
Welcome to the Sheerluxe Highlights podcast with me, Charlotte Collins. This week, I'm joined by Lou Half, Heather Steele and Becky Hull. Hi, everyone.
Hi. Hello.
What's everybody been watching this week?
Well, I got two, actually. As you can tell, it was a rainy weekend, so yeah. I was indoors for most of it. And everyone's probably seen this, but I finally watched Lion on Netflix.
Oh, my God.
I was in bits.
Yeah. That's up there with one of those films I've cried more than any other film.
And also, I think Nicole Kidman just brings something out in me. I don't know what it is. She's the most incredible actress. And she's not even the main character, but I think just the storyline. Because everyone said to me, oh, you're crying. I was like, oh, I probably won't. I was honestly in bits. It's so emotive. Dev Patel deserved everything he got for that. I mean, the little boy, it was just so good.
So he's adopted.
So yeah, for background, Dev Patel is adopted. It's based on a true story. And as a child, he literally falls asleep on a train and ends up completely away from his family. And then he gets adopted. But it shows you kind of the life he could have had as well, which is just petrifying. And then it shows you how he gets incorporated into this amazing life, but he always knows something is missing.
So he gets adopted like upwardly socially.
Exactly, but I think for him, because he has snippets of remembering sort of what his life was as well, I think he sort of feels like he's cheating almost. Mm. So that's kind of,
and it's set in India,
yeah, the first half, yeah, and then the second half is Australia, I think.
Got it.
I won't say too much because if people haven't seen it, but it is so worth it. I mean, I honestly think you feel warm at the ending, but it is very emotional.
Yeah, and pretty really warm. I have to say that's why I haven't watched it.
Yeah, I wasn't actually prepared for how upset I'd be. And then also been watching Endeavour on a Sunday night. I don't know if anyone else has. I feel like no one has. But it's Inspector Morse. So for anyone that knows the books, it's him when he's younger. He is called Endeavour. It's him in his former years. And it's a detective series set in Oxford. It's a bit Midsummer Murders, but done in a much better way. And they're all really, I mean, it's murder mystery, essentially. But it's also about the corrupt police force as well. And yeah, if you're a fan of the books, it's his former life. So I've been watching that, but I also do love Batiste on a Sunday.
Oh my God, last night was so good. I'm literally on the edge of my seat every episode and they just keep changing what's going on.
Oh,
like,
God.
You think you're on one journey and then suddenly
you're on
somebody else.
Baptiste is one mystery, an ongoing. Yes. Is Endeavour the same or is it each episode is different?
Endeavour's each episode's a different crime, but they're 2 hours long on a Sunday night, so I feel like you can really get into it. Yeah, yeah. It's quite an investment. The final one was last night.
Where is it on?
ITV.
Okay.
But you can catch up on it. And it is worth it if you kind of just want to immerse yourself in something for 2 hours. But yeah, it clashes with Baptiste, and I am a huge fan because I used to watch The Missing, which what it was formerly. So I've got into the habit of catching up with Baptiste on a Monday. Yeah. And actually this one already feels better than The Missing.
Completely. And also Tom Hundler is in it, who is so fantastic.
He's incredible actor.
You'll love it.
Okay, I'm excited. Yeah. How many are there?
There's been three so far.
I think there's six in total.
Yeah,
eight.
There's six.
Oh God, I don't want it to end.
Also last week I listened to Ian Schrager's Table Manners podcast, which was fascinating. But also on that I found out that they are doing a competition with Red Nose Day. So you can win the opportunity to watch them filming Table Manners podcast with Richard Curtis.
What, like in their house?
Yes.
That's cool. Isn't so you just sit there.
Yeah, isn't that amazing?
That's amazing. A bit weird.
Richard Curtis would be so fascinating. Mm. And I was looking at all the other things that you can win through Red Nose Day. And you can also win afternoon tea with the royal family from The Crown.
Oh my
what
god.
What do you mean?
Oh, so you could all of them? I think it's Claire Foy, Matt Smith, Vanessa Kirby.
It's just the old family.
That's pretty amazing.
At Richard Curtis's house. So I think it's £10 a ticket, and you can then buy as many tickets as you want, and obviously all the proceeds go to charity.
That's so nice. That's really cool. The thing I'm most surprised about, though, is that Ian Traeger did a Table Manners.
Yeah. He was obviously the founder of Studio 54, so he's talking a lot about that. And then now, you know, I guess he's a hotelier and all the hotels he's got and how times have changed. His voice is like nothing I expected it to be.
Really? Is it not like classic New York?
Really, really Brooklyn. And it's kind of got a real like husky kind of, you can tell he's a character just from his voice. Yeah. But yeah, fascinating actually. Really good stories.
Oh, cool. I'm going to have a listen. Hello, what about you?
I haven't watched anything on TV because I've basically been going to bed at about 9:30 every night because I'm just exhausted at the moment for whatever reason.
Well, you were in Japan.
Yes, that was excellent. Yeah, I'm sure I'll talk about it at length another time when my feature's out. But yeah, I basically haven't watched any TV that's been on at all. But I did watch Bohemian Rhapsody finally on the plane. And yes, it was as good as everybody said it was. I've been listening to Queen ever since. So yeah, all good things.
I heard on the radio this morning that there's a video that's gone viral of him when he's really young and him basically talking about who his idols were.
Rami.
Yeah. Ah. And how much he wanted to play.
Really? And do you think he deserved to win the Oscar?
I haven't seen all the films because some of them haven't come out yet for the actual Oscars, but I think,
it's a very good piece of acting.
Yeah, his teeth were great. But I also watched Can You Ever Forgive Me as well, which I really enjoyed.
So that's the Richard E. Grant one.
Yeah, I know. I mean, I really did want him to win just because of everything that was going on
but
around
So the furore around it was that he was just basically the least cool person ever about his nomination, and he was just so excited all over social media, all over interviews, just being like, oh, I'm so excited, everyone was lauding as really refreshing, right?
Definitely.
But I thought that meant he didn't expect to win at all, so therefore it didn't really matter.
No, I think he was just happy to be there, you know, and everyone says, I was just happy to be nominated.
He genuinely was.
But he was very good in it. He wasn't in it that much, really. Mainly Melissa McCarthy, who plays a biographer called Lee Israel in the 90s, who does lots of celebrity biographies, but she's kind of running a bit thin on ideas, or her ideas are a bit niche, so nobody really wants to publish what her latest book is. She's skinned, so she ends up stumbling across in the library a celebrity letter from back in the day, takes it into a bookshop, and they buy it for $125, and they're like, oh, it's a good one, but it's not that interesting. Like, I could give you a lot more if you ever manage to find some juicy ones. So from there, she starts kind of manufacturing her own sort of fraudulently written celebrity letters from like the 20s, and then from there kind of gets drunken old Richard E. Grant, who she meets in a bar, kind of involved in the scam. But it's a true story, and basically she gets caught by the FBI and faces prison time. But it's just a nice story, the two of them getting to know each other, and they're both kind of come from hardship, and it's just fun, and it's not very long. It's just a nice character piece.
From everything I've read and heard about it, I still can't work out if it's comedic or if it's miserable.
It's a bit of both, really, because I think when you see Melissa McCarthy, I'm always like primed for fun, but I think she's just so dark and sarcastic that brings the humour in. But then it is set against the kind of, you know, 90s AIDS backdrop in New York other things, so there's definitely serious things going on as well. But yeah, I thought they were both excellent. Don't think it's Oscar worthy personally, but I did enjoy both performances, and Richard E. Grant was a sensation usual. So
well, one thing I have to recommend before we move on is a show I saw last week called Come From Away.
It was amazing.
So it is an entirely true story about, on the day of 9/11, they shut the American airspace after both planes hit the Twin Towers. But obviously there were planes occupying American airspace at that time, so they had to divert all of those planes. There were 38 in the sky in total. So they diverted them to an island off the coast of Canada called Newfoundland, which is a teeny, teeny, tiny, the people's accents are sort of half Canadian, half Irish. It's like really just isolated in the middle of the Atlantic, tiny population, and these 38 planes were all sent to this tiny airport. 7,000 people in total landed on the island that day, and the people were given like, you know, half an hour's notice, and all these people descended there. These people had no idea what was going on. They weren't told anything because obviously everybody was really suspicious amongst the kind of airline industry. People were really suspicious of other people on planes. Nobody really knew anything. So a lot of these people were held on their planes for up to 28 hours, like no food, no water, no entertainment, anything. This is in the days, you know, there were like 3 mobile phones on the whole plane, that kind of thing. Yeah. So basically it tells the story of the people of Newfoundland, or Gander specifically, which is an area there, and how they dealt with all these people arriving. And it also tells the story of certain individuals who were on the planes as well. So the cast is only maybe 14 people, and they each play 2 characters. They each play people from Newfoundland and they play somebody from the plane. They end up staying there for just under a week, these people, sleeping in churches and pubs and, you know, whatever space they could find. You couldn't even begin to make up this story. You know, if somebody said, I've got this idea for a musical, you'd think it was ridiculous.
Oh, it's a musical.
It's a musical. I know. It's a musical, which, again, sounds so incongruous, but it just works. They handle the whole thing so sensitively. And the music, there are tone-tapping bits because they've got a really strong culture there, which has got a kind of Western cowboy vibe without being from that era of the world. Mm-hmm. And so there are those kind of fun toe-tapping bits, but then a lot of it is really heartfelt. And every person there just had, obviously, a really, really human story. People were coming from all over the world. Some people didn't even speak English because some of the flights were from Cairo and from Paris, and they were going to America for all different reasons. Some families, people were alone, people on business, people who ended up forging relationships. And the reason the people who wrote this musical found out about it, obviously, it didn't receive much press attention at the time because there were other things going on. But on the 10-year anniversary, so on September 11th, 2011, a large proportion of the people went back to Newfoundland because they had forged such strong relationships across those days that they went back to half as a commemoration of what happened, but also as a celebration of what happened that brought all these people together from across the world. So it's about that. It's about how in just the space of 5 days, something so terrible and huge can affect individuals. And it's just, I'm getting goosebumps talking about it. It's so powerful. It's amazing.
Whoever wrote it, did they get sort of snippets of information from people that were in that and then translated that into a story?
Yeah, so it's one of those things where, you know, when you come out and you're like, I need to Google everything So having researched it, everything was real. Basically, a documentary was made about the reunion. So the filmmakers, I think, caught wind of the reunion and went across for that. So they got all the testimonies or whatever from people there. I'm pretty sure that even when people are speaking on stage, a lot of it is like word for word descriptions. People are directly playing other people. So it's complete testimony, you know, true testimonies and entirely true stories, but obviously kind of dramatised. There's not many props or there's not much staging or anything. There's a lot of like body movement and, you know, to symbolise things. But the way they do that, the way they symbolise 7,000 people on planes landing, it's just incredible. It's so amazing. I can't recommend it enough. It's not hideously expensive for London Theatre. There were decent tickets for like £40. So I really, really recommend it. It's on at the Phoenix Theatre on Tonnacourt Road. Let's talk now about intermittent fasting. From the 5-2 diet to the 16-8 diet, we wrote about intermittent fasting and why it's become pretty trendy recently. Heather, you are the obvious person to start with. Queen of the 5-2. Are you still doing it?
Yeah, I really like it. I ate loads over the weekend because I went back to see my family and we just ate loads. And even, I don't know if it's just because I've got used to doing these fast days now, but this morning I was like, I'm so ready for a fast day. Like, I still feel really full and I'm like, I'm so happy that I don't have to.
Wow.
So it feels like a detox, really.
Yeah, whereas usually I just can keep going constantly and I'm perfectly fine. So I don't know if that's just a side effect of that or whether it's just the routine.
And how long have you been doing it for now?
I started doing it in October.
Wow.
So I've done it, it's just kind of a routine now, which is what I wanted it to be. Because my mum and dad do it. My mum a bit more successfully than my dad. But yeah, I think it just becomes part of your lifestyle. Yeah. So it doesn't feel like a diet at all. And I've had success with it as well. So I'm just kind of keen to keep it up. I'll see how I go. I've got like a goal weight. So I think when I get there, I'll probably do 6-1. And then that's more of a kind of maintenance thing. So it'll only be maybe a Monday where I'll only have 500 calories.
And did you see the results pretty quickly?
Yeah, so kind of losing like a pound a week. So Christmas, I kind of put a bit on. Yeah. But who cares? Everyone does. So yeah, but generally I'm finding that if I do it properly, because there have been a few weeks where I've maybe had like 700 calories on one of the days because I've just been on the train home and I'm like, I'm fucking starving and I need to eat something.
And what do you eat on a 500 calorie day?
That's the thing, I'm mixing it up all the time because you have to be really clever. That's the only annoying thing I'd say about doing it, is that basically I try and get as much food as I can into those days. So I won't eat anything until about 2 or 3 o'clock.
Oh, wow.
So I'll have a couple of black coffees and then won't have anything. and then I'll have like a little bit of brown rice and a pack of cooked prawns because they're like filling, but they haven't got many calories.
Okay, it's quite
in.
A filling lunch. And particularly when you've been that starving hungry, you can get full up quite quickly.
Exactly. So and if I eat it slower than usual as well, that'll help. Okay. Have a load of sort of green tea or herbal tea in the afternoon, and then when I get back, have like a piece of salmon with some sort of vegetables. And that's for me a good thing at the moment because you feel like you're eating quite a lot. Whereas on other days, M&S actually do some really good ready meals that are only like 230 calories. So I've had those in the evening and then been snacking hippies because they're not very calorific. Sometimes I like have those on the train back and I can incorporate those. So yeah, you have to experiment a bit, I think. I'm going to try a juice thing in a couple of weeks. There's one company who do your 500 calories in juices. So maybe just try that because sometimes it is just annoying because you've really got to plan what you're going to eat and when. You can't like kind of grab something on the go.
And the time until like 2 p.m. or whenever you first eat, are you headachy? Are you moody?
No, not. I don't feel like it. I think in the past I've been quite guilty of not having breakfast all the time when I should have been. So I think in a way it's almost an extension of that, kind of just making it last a little bit longer.
But they're now saying that despite kind of all the previous advice that to lose weight you have to have breakfast. So the 16-8, for example, the other diet, which is where you basically fast for 16 hours a day, so you eat only in a window of 8 hours.
Yes.
That's another supposedly proven way of losing weight with intermittent fasting, and that completely deletes breakfast from your diet. Or you could do breakfast, but you'd then be finished having dinner like 3 p.m. So people they say, oh, don't they do like 12 to late? That's quite a sensible way to do it, and that's completely eradicating breakfast and that myth, I suppose.
I think for me, just when I have breakfast, obviously as it's meant to, your metabolism keeps going, gets started, and then that's when I suddenly, if I have breakfast, I'm starving at 10 o'clock. I find if I like leave it a bit longer, then I'm not kind of absolutely wanting lunch at like 11 a.m.
Interesting. Do we think this is a good thing? It obviously works if you're sensible and really on top of it like Heather, but do you think it's a slippery slope to starving yourself?
I think it is. I was reading this earlier, the 16-8 one in particular, they were saying it's obviously good if you're mindful of what you're eating, but also there's nothing to say what you should be eating in those 8 hours. So you could be just eating loads of shit, which just really isn't good for you. So I personally think it's more about what you're eating rather than when you're eating it that is more impactful.
I think the overriding takeaway from this piece is that it's for people who aren't very good at that, isn't it? It's for people who need a bit of structure. But there's another one, the warrior diet. You fast for 20 hours, so you could have like breakfast 10 o'clock today and then like 6 a.m.
tomorrow.
But I mean, my only experience of fasting is Yom Kippur, the Jewish fast day. But oh my god, you get so hungry.
I wouldn't want to do that.
And I just don't think that that's a wise thing to put your body through. I know what it's like by the time you get to kind of 4 or 5 o'clock on those fast days.
You're
just not a functioning person. And it worries me that people will do it kind of under the umbrella of legitimacy that these kind of named diets are giving it.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Should you be sleeping apart? That's the question we put to our readers last week. With the launch of a new lane-keeping bed, which encourages partners to stick to their side of the mattress, we're wondering, should we all be sleeping alone, or is that the death of romance? Becky?
I feel 50-50 on this. I can understand why people would want to do it, because I do agree that I probably sleep much better on my own. I'm less aware of somebody else, and I'm less aware of sort of tugging covers or things like that. So I think probably there are a lot of benefits to it. But yeah, I personally think it would be a shame to...
You're willing to forfeit a good night's sleep?
I'm willing to forfeit a good night's sleep to continue sharing a bed.
Lou?
I think it's just down to personal preference. Mm. My sleep isn't massively affected by my partner being there. I actually find it more strange when he's not there and very aware. But I think for some people, you know, if you're on different schedules, when you go to bed, when you wake up in the morning, and you do get interrupted by that, like, and your sleep pattern is interrupted, then I can definitely see the benefits of it. So I think it's just down to personal preference, really. I don't think there should be a, like, a right or wrong or really a rule. I think it's whatever suits you and your partner.
Mm. Heather, what do you think?
Yeah, I like sharing a bed, but I am excited, hopefully, at some stage this year to get a second bedroom, just because I feel really guilty because I'm basically there with the hairdryer waking up really early every morning.
And you're so the early one.
I'm the early one. So yeah. And also I liked going to bed earlier as well because we live in a studio flat. It's kind of all or nothing.
Yeah,
you can't if he wants to continue doing whatever, I have to really put my eye mask and stuff in to try and go to sleep. And then the other way around, when I get up at like 6:20, he, as quiet as I try to be, he has to wake up. And I often have to get dressed in the dark as well. So it would be nice to have a separate room to do all the getting ready stuff in, maybe.
That's a good point.
That wouldn't disrupt as much, I think.
And in terms of romance, do you think that sleeping together is a key part of that? Like, I don't think anyone's suggesting that you stop having sex, but I think it's just for quality of sleep, right? Mm. So do you think that you could do your business and then totter off into your next bedroom or to the next bed? I quite like the idea of that, I'm not going to lie.
We often have, like, good chats when we're somehow in bed. I think sometimes when the light turns off and it's almost like, you know, when you have a sleepover.
Suddenly,
all day to talk about things and then suddenly you get your best chat.
Yeah. So true.
So, yeah, I think I would miss that.
Yeah. And the first thing in the morning, like, waking up on a weekend, for example.
Who would I tell my dreams to?
But you don't have to have separate bedrooms. You could just have separate beds. True. The example in this was about a lane-keeping bed. Like, I don't know, it's a bed with, like, a divider between the two.
I could get on board with.
Yeah.
I think separate beds sounds nicer than separate...
Separate rooms.
It's just more bed making to be had.
Yeah,
that's true.
And that also somehow feels a bit more final than just having a separate room.
Yeah.
Yes. Do you think there's a stigma attached to it? You know, when I was younger, if somebody's parents slept in separate bedrooms, that's what people would say about them, isn't it?
Yeah,
like, they have separate beds, their parents.
Yeah.
Do you think that that will go now? I don't know, it seems to be more of a trend now. Or do you think it's still a bit weird?
I still find it a bit of an odd concept, I'm not going to lie. Because, like you've just said, the first thing that springs to mind is parents that aren't getting on anymore. Or they might be getting a divorce. So I think it will always have those connotations.
How would you go back as well?
Yeah.
If you decided to try it and then one person was like, actually, I'm going to...
I think the key is a really big bed, like a hotel room. Yeah. I think that's the only way to do it. You have to just sacrifice your space and that's go for a massive bed. Because I sleep a lot better when I'm alone. Mm-hmm. But if we're in a giant bed, then all the things that keep me up, I don't notice. Impossible.
So
space ceiling.
Snoring would maybe be the...
Snoring is an issue.
The only thing that will help out is a separate bedroom.
Exactly. Separate bed won't help.
Or like
that.
Some kind of nasal reconstructive surgery.
Yes.
That's the other option. Well, this piece says that historically the marital bed was for romantic endeavours rather than sleep. For the Romans and the Victorians, sharing a bed for snoozing was seen as unhealthy. I quite like that.
Mm.
Yeah,
I think, I think we've just changed it, haven't we?
Yeah.
And it is a bit of a weird concept when you think about, like, the 8 hours you're asleep, you're next to another person.
Yeah, I find it really weird.
It's true.
And, like, when you move in together, it's like, now you have the same bed. It's like our bed. It's like, it's my bed.
Yeah.
Anyway, whether you agree or don't agree, do have a read of our piece and see what you think. I feel like we talk about treats and snacks on the podcast quite a lot, but we wrote yet another piece about handbag-friendly, healthy treats. Things like best for on-the-go breakfast, best for afternoon snacking, best for vegans, and best for pre-gym snacking. So I want to know, what are your go-to snacks on the go?
Oh, I love a good snack.
I was going to say, this is right up your street. Hit us.
Pretty much everything on the list, I definitely indulge in. Off the in path, the pea snacks are a firm favourite in the office. Charlotte poo-pooed them at first.
I'm confused with something else and then I really liked them.
Yeah, they come in a variety of different flavours and shapes and they're just really good.
We're not so keen on the disc style ones.
No, although those are, I think, better for you.
And they're less flavoured.
Yeah.
I had the balsamic vinegar sort of tubes.
The salty tubes are the best, closely followed by the balsamic vinegar ones.
Yes. Oh, I bet they're nice.
They're so good.
Mm. They are so good. And you can buy them like in a little mini for on the go or big family pack, which pretty much lasts two helpfuls. Hippies as well, another favourite in the office. They're made from chickpeas and quinoa, so I think they've got a good protein balance. Love corn.
I love, yes. Love corn.
Oh, I love
so good.
Love corn, yeah.
Just very noisy. You don't want to really eat that on
in the office. I feel bad if I'm crunching down on some love corn.
Yeah. Yeah. And the M&S version as well, which is so good. The giant corn.
Oh, I've not tried that.
Oh, my so God. Good. The salted kernels.
Yes, they are.
Next level. Mm-hmm.
Can you get them at the garage?
No.
No, oh, okay. No. You've got to go to like a proper M&S.
Right, yeah.
But they're bigger than the love corn ones. You know, like Peruvian corn?
Oh, yeah.
It's that, like the really big pieces.
And really salty.
Really salty, really crunchy.
I need to get some of that.
They're really high in protein as well.
And really good with a drink.
Yeah.
Just if you're not being sensitive.
I think that so many of these snacks now are high in protein. I think previously, you know, it was just crisps, really.
Yeah.
Which, you know, super salty, high in saturated fats.
Yeah.
So I think there are so many good options available. And, you know, at your local Sainsbury's, you don't need to go to like a health shop anymore. So
you can't beat a pop chip though, can you?
I was literally, pop chips are my favourite thing. I actually am obsessed with pop chips.
But even they're not as bad as, you know, traditional
ones.
No.
So because they're
popped. Feel too bad.
Is that why? Because they're actually popped?
Because they're popped.
They're not fried.
I think if you just look at the ingredients and stuff, and for me, normally when I'm snacking, if there's anything I don't really understand what it is, then I'm like, I shouldn't be
cutting
this.
Exactly.
Deliciously Ella, I also love all of those balls. Naked bars.
I like naked bars,
Naked
actually.
Bars are good.
Yeah.
I do find they all taste the same, though. That would be my only criticism of them.
The rhubarb and custard ones, definitely. Got more of a sort of Bakewell tart, sorry.
Oh, yeah.
That one's,
I quite like the chocolate orange one as well.
Yeah,
that does taste like
that
chocolate
does
orange.
Taste nice.
Heather, any other favourites?
I'm a big crisp person. I love them. But so, yeah, I am loving the fact that there are now healthier ones. I don't feel so bad. But, yeah, I think hippies are definitely my current
even like
go-to.
WH Smith has got such a huge variety. I think you know, train stations often that's where you pick up your snack intake.
I would occasionally be like, if I'm being bad, like I need some crisps to get me through, but now you can just grab you don't feel quite so bad, or you can have two and it's the same.
Well,
and
that's, it works that's out well. With pot chips they're healthy, but I eat a family size pack.
It's like four in a packet.
Becky, what about you?
Well, mine was going to be pop chips. Yeah, boring, I know, but I am obsessed with them, honestly. In my old job, everyone used to take the piss out of me because I would stockpile on pop chips, salt and vinegar. And then...
Oh, salt and vinegar, interesting.
Salt and vinegar,
definitely.
Oh, no,
definitely
I like plain.
Salt and vinegar.
I also prefer the ridgy ones rather than the flat ones.
I love tried those, I saw them the other day.
Yeah,
flavour in a ridge.
I haven't seen a ridgy one.
Yeah,
like there'll be more flavour in those, even better.
When I think of Ridgy, I just think of like salt and vinegar
McCoy.
Oh my god, the Ridge McCoy.
Oh, when you are hungover, that and a Ribena. Amazing.
We had those the other day. Salt and vinegar McCoy's. Yeah, we were not hungover.
No, just
like to point out,
just
being
greedy.
We have a lot.
But yeah, pop chips and the love corn. That's it for healthy. But I have got a bit partial to putting mini eggs in my bag at the moment.
Okay,
it's got out of hand.
It's the season.
Season. Well, I really love the clear spring nuts. These are healthier, which are little, do you know which ones I mean?
Yeah.
They're really little packets. You can get them on Ocado, Planet Organic. I haven't seen them in a supermarket yet. But
Whole
they
Foods
do
them as well.
Whole Foods, exactly those kind of places. But they do almonds, cashews, and pumpkin seeds, I think. Like they're roasted in soy.
I know the ones you mean.
They're
good.
So good. And like, you know, when you just need a savory pick me up, just something to, particularly when sitting at your desk and you're just mindless
instant.
Eating. They're so good. So delicious. They're not cheap. It's £1.80 for like a little bag. But I think they last you kind of two snack sessions and they're so delicious.
Good. The Clear Spring rice crackers that have got sort of seaweed through them as well are also good because they've got that real saltiness to them, but they're not. It's just the seaweed.
Yeah.
It's not bad stuff.
Yeah, they
they're
do a lot of
good.
Those really delicious Asian-y snacks because they've got those little black sea cracker things.
Yeah,
they're really good.
Dried seaweed, loads of healthy snacks.
I'm excited about this one. 20 supermarket beauty bargain buys. Too good to miss. Becky, you wrote a piece on the thrifty beauty things we should be buying from Asda to Lidl. So I want to know, really, you can buy your beauty stuff at the supermarket?
Honestly, you can. I mean, a lot of it is rip-offs from really good brands, but they are as effective as their expensive counterparts, especially with Aldi, because we all know they have slightly copied the Jo Malone candles. But the reason they can do it is because Jo Malone put their ingredients on the candles, so anybody can do that. Yeah, so I think it's because they've just always put their ingredients on from the beginning. So Aldi have done some really impressive duplicates. And I have to say, I personally don't think you could tell the difference. And they are at
a fraction of the price. Wow. My boyfriend's dad literally went and bought loads because he thought they were going to go out of stock because he was so paranoid. The candles, honestly, they're like £6.
Wow.
They're cheap.
Are they and big as well?
You can get the big, like, deluxe ones for just as little. So really impressive dupes. Mm-hmm. And some of the night creams at, like, Marks and Spencer's are £22, which, okay, on the surface sounds still quite a bit, but they're sellouts because their formulas are so effective. I mean, one of the Marks and Spencer's one, Ultimate Sleep Cream, had a waiting list for absolutely ages.
I remember
and
that.
And who's creating these creams?
Well, technically they're all being made in the same factory, but because it's under a high street shopping name, they can afford to make it.
But it's obviously not the same products.
No, it's not the same products, but it's very similar formulas. Oh. Definitely.
So that was the M&S Formula Absolute Ultimate Sleep Cream.
And that was a bestseller. It completely sold out.
It says 7,500 people were on the waitlist for that.
Yeah, well, massive amount. So they're really big. And actually, one of my favourite places for beauty buys is Marks and Spencer's.
They've got really good brands.
Oh, the best beauty range. Really worth checking out.
So come on, what else? Hit us. What else should we be looking at?
One of my favourite brands is Yope, and that is now sold at Waitrose.
Yes, so I had a Yope hand cream and had no idea that it was a cheapy thing.
It's literally become a staple for everybody now. So Yope is one of my favourite brands. And also I think it's just the fun packaging. They've just kind of clocked onto that. It's all completely eco-friendly, really green. It's a really fun brand. Then also in Waitrose, they've got my favourite shampoo brand, which is OGX.
I like that one when it's on special offer.
It's the best. I mean, you can get it in Boots as well, but if I'm taking you aisle by aisle, that is one of my absolute favourites. And Sainsbury's have some good ones too. They've got a new brand called Love Beauty and Planet, which is completely eco-friendly again, but you don't lose any of the benefits. They've got really gorgeous scents and they keep your skin feeling really smooth. So it is 100% worth checking out your local supermarket for beauty buys, especially if you are on a budget, because chances are you can find things that work just as well.
Amazing. I actually get the M&S Rose and Bay hand wash, which is like a mixture of two amazing Diptyque candles, basically.
Yeah.
And it's like £2.50. It's amazing.
George, do the Blush Soft Touch Stick, which is really similar to our favourite Rosie Huntington Whiteley blusher.
Nice.
I mean, again, very similar. Probably isn't as creamy, but
okay,
if you want something for £3.95.
I was going to say, how much is that?
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah.
And is the Rosie Huntington Whiteley one an M&S one as well?
Yeah.
Yeah, £15. I mean, that is, I will say, the formula of that is incredible. But if you are on a budget or if you are wanting to be a bit thrifty, the George Blush Soft Touch Stick is a really great alternative.
Fascinating. Heather, do you ever get anything?
I tend to do my shopping at Lidl and Morrison's, which isn't on this list. But I do like, M&S, the one in Brighton. It's just before you go into the food bit, if you ever wander there, it's just got, the whole sort of beauty thing. And I just like that they've got loads of different brands. And I think they're one of the few places in Britain where you can get Skin, which is SKYN.
Yeah.
The Icelandic brand, which really works well with my skin. And you can get that at MS. So
And
they've got the odd thing there.
It's really impressive, honestly. And also, if you go to like a really big one, it's all laid out really clean.
Yeah, it's nice.
It's a great shopping experience.
I don't think I've ever seen beauty at M&S. I need to like calm this down.
And they've got Rodial,
Ren.
They've got so many different brands.
Can you get yourself to M&S, Charlotte? I think I only go to our little petrol one. I need to extend my M&S reach.
I get those big corn and some nice beauty bars.
Right, shopping list.
Fascinating. Okay, well, for all of Becky's recommendations and more, do check out the piece on site. I'm going to go shopping. Wow. What does it mean to be original? Our Sheerlux contributor, Clover Stroud, who regularly writes the midlife column for us, put that question to herself and to our readers last week off the back of a school project for her teenage daughter about what it really meant to be original. We're now asking the question, do you care? So I'm going to put it to you guys. What does being original mean to you, and do you care about being it? Heather.
It's quite tricky. I think maybe it was something I cared about more when I was a teenager, just in that kind of rebellious way where you obviously want to be different from your parents or stand out for different reasons, I suppose. I was the only goth in my school, so I suppose...
Were you a goth?
I was. So I suppose in that sense, I was trying to be original. But now, I suppose it's more about authenticity and just trying to kind of live how you want to live.
Yeah, that's
and
so true.
Not really caring about what other people might think about you.
That's bit of a buzzword, isn't it? Authenticity.
It is.
Lou, do you care about being original?
No, I don't think so. I think, as you say, Heather, it's about being authentic and true to who you are and who you want to be and what you believe in and what you enjoy and like. And, you know, the piece references Instagram a lot, you know, being a great place for inspiration, but also can kind of lead you down a path of indecision and maybe confusion to what you think you should be doing. And I think you often just need to take a step back and be like, actually, do I want to do that? Do I want to wear that? Do I want to go to that place or say that thing or whatever? It's a minefield. And, you know, I'm pleased I'm not a teenager, I think, in this time where you're on a path of exploration and discovering yourself. And, you know, I feel like I know who I am now. But I think it's difficult for young people. Mm. And I liked when she references, you know, looking at a young child and, you know, they haven't been tainted by anything in the world around them. And I think are being their sort of purest self. And I think that's really important as well, that we just remind ourselves of those things.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, similarly, I would say when I was younger, I was much more about sort of fitting in and being a certain person. And you focus on that when you're younger. But I think I am slowly starting to learn that the second you actually like yourself and the second you just like who you are and what you're doing, you get this confidence that it's just who you are. And that, to me, is what original is. That's your original self.
And surely it's more difficult to try to be something that you're not than just be who you are.
Keep up an act. Exactly.
Yeah, and like you said, I think I can't imagine growing up in today's world and constantly, especially when you're young, and now they have got Instagram. I mean, it used to just be MSN, which was bad enough, but Instagram now, as a child, I can only imagine I would have been like, why don't I look like that? Or why am I not? It's hard. So I definitely think there comes an acceptance with getting older, and just learning to like who you are is the best way to be original.
I think the people are talking about it like we are now. Obviously, there is Instagram, but then it's also very discussed, the facade of it and everything that goes on behind that. So.
I'm not sure that if you're 16 though and you're looking at Kylie Jenner and those people, that that's, you know,
that's what
that you're going to be thinking it's all fake. I think kind of tying it all into like what originality means, I think I care way more about being original now than I did as a teenager. As a teenager, I just wanted to fit in. I just wanted to be as unoriginal as possible, because the easiest thing to do was to follow the crowd and to wear what people were wearing and do what people were doing. Whereas now, I care way more about being original, but that doesn't tie in with a lack of authenticity. I think it's the opposite of that. To be my most authentic self is not to be following the crowd and not to be doing the cookie cutter way of doing things. So actually finding original ways to do things sits way more comfortably with me, whether it's my career, my wedding, whatever it may be. Finding an original way to do that that feels different to what everybody's doing is actually really important to me. So I think they don't have to be kind of mutually exclusive, and one isn't necessarily a negative where one's a positive.
I also think it's important to remember that not everything you do has to break the mold.
It's this whole like new thing where you're expected to be so many different things, right? You're supposed to be like a curator and a this and a that, and you're supposed to be so kind of unique in every different way. And actually, like, you might just be shit at this, and you might just actually be only really good at that.
So
and I feel like there's a lot of pressure to be to be original in what you're wearing and in what you're pitching to people and in so many different ways of living your life, and that's quite stressful.
Exactly. Like, if you want to wear a plain jumper or read a book that everyone's read, mainstream, that doesn't matter. Like, you don't have, it doesn't everything have to be sort of quirky.
So true.
Most things are popular for a reason. I don't think there's any shame in watching a TV program everyone's watching and not, because it's good.
And not just following it because everyone else is, but following it because actually you just really like it.
Yeah, definitely.
So Clover, who wrote this piece, her daughter's suggested definition of originality was living in a colourful way without caring how other people judge you, but doing things that really matter to you. Being original requires a certain amount of bravery because it also means standing out. I get that, as when I think of all the people I admire and the people who I would like to be like, they are people who are, you know, in the purest definition of the word, original and do things their own way. And I don't think professionally necessarily you get that far by blending into the crowd, but that's not the same as always trying to be the always trying to be a disruptor. And I completely agree with you, it's not about always trying to be the different one, it's just about finding your voice,
isn't it? It's just about finding you,
just being true to who you are, I think.
Well, let's end by talking about some fashion. We did a couple of handbag stories last week. First up are white handbags to buy for spring. Lou, can you buy a white handbag?
I love a white handbag. I think it was about a year ago when Charlotte and I did a shoot, and one of the accessories was the little white Wandler handbag, which I have loved ever since. And I'm surprised I don't own yet.
Because yeah. I've been going on about it for about a year.
But I just think white handbag can really make an outfit feel just a bit fresher and more spring-like.
It's a bit unexpected.
It's exactly. Yeah,
it's a statement.
It is a statement. I got one from LM, which is a small company which is just starting to kind of poke its head above the parapet, and I love it. It just makes everything feel a bit cooler. It's a white crossbody, and it's got a big gold clasp on the front. Ooh, and nice. Yeah, you can be wearing something really classic and then add a white bag, and it feels a bit
exactly.
forward.
And I think wear like a black or a dark navy, whatever, can sort of complement a look. A white will like add something to your look.
Yeah. Definitely.
So true. You
guys in the market for one?
I am, actually, because I always wear jeans and I feel like maybe that will up my game a bit. And I do need new bags because I don't really invest in good bags. I'm a bit lazy with stuff like that.
Well, the thing I would say about a white bag is it will get dirty.
That's
and it is a trend. So I wouldn't necessarily spend a fortune one. But that Wonder one is particularly good.
Yeah, and there are some good sort of mid-entry price point, this sort of contemporary brands that are up in their game. I think go with something small and a bit fun.
Yeah.
The Chloe ones as well, like if you are looking for a classic, they are amazing. Mm. And it's not your everyday, you've got to be careful with it and, you know, put your leather protector on and wipe it down.
But COS have some M&S whistles. There are also some
M&S
actually, out there.
M&S are really getting a shout out of this podcast.
Yeah, really
they do have some great accessories.
Yeah, they do. And the white M&S boots, they haven't even sponsored this podcast. Yeah. But the white M&S boots are also my absolute go-to. I've had three pairs. They're the best. Finally, let's talk about rucksacks. We wrote a piece about the 15 practical rucksacks to buy right now. They're functional, but I like to think stylish as well. What do we think? Rucksack fans?
I love a rucksack. I mean, I am a bit like that. I'm so casual in style, but I have had a hype rucksack.
What's
really
a hype rucksack?
Okay, so they're really colourful and a bit rapey.
And they're like those teenage ones.
Yeah. Like, cringe. I remember I went out on a night out and I took it with me and all my friends were like, no, that needs to go. So this really inspired me because some of them are really sleek and
they
black.
Are sleek.
And I just think, why not? You can get so much in a rucksack and you literally just put it on your back rather than worrying about things around your waist. I just think it's such a good idea and I'm a big fan of practicality, so I will be buying one.
You are right, they are so much better for your posture, aren't they, than the tote bags that we're all guilty of slapping things around in. Heather?
Yeah, I need a backpack, and actually this came at exactly the right time because I'm very much in need of one. And I do like the look of like the leather ones as well, because it does smarten it up a bit, because I think it can be hard traditionally to make a backpack look sort of work friendly.
Yes,
but
so true.
Yeah, I think as long as it's got some decent straps on, and all for it.
I think that's the key to making it work. We have got a couple that are that kind of heavy duty. But yeah, if you want something a bit sleeker and leather, even Eastpak do a really nice smart one.
Because I've got an Eastpak one that I've had. I remember I got given it when I was 14 for school, and it's got like a 20-year guarantee on. I was like, well,
really?
I'm not going to have that for 20 years, but I've still got it.
They do, yeah. I think
it does last. But yeah, it's not very cool if you go for a weekend away to kind of trundle in with a navy Eastpak.
My hero from researching actually was Matt and Nat, which is the vegan brand. These are all Matt and Nat. Aren't
they're
they
nice.
Really cheap?
Really. Yeah. Actually, the pink's nice.
I know, the pink is
not
nice.
Not as wearable, but really
nice.
Yeah,
they are really like fuss-free and smart and
Oh, yeah,
you like that?
Oh, I know. I'm just thinking, because I thought the Zara one, because it's $19.99, but now I'm like, the Matt and Nichols, nice.
The Zara one's a bit more fashion, whereas these ones are a little bit more practical.
But still cool. They look
still
cool.
Yeah, I agree.
You slip your laptop in those.
Well, exactly. I'm not sure it's necessarily for the weekend, but if you are looking for a practical way to bring your laptop and things like that to work, then it's a great option. Well, I think that's just about it for this week. If you enjoyed that, please do rate, review, subscribe, and tell your friends, and we'll see you next time.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.